Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Believe in Bears. My name is Joy Christopoulos, my co-host Corey Wooten. But first, today's episode is presented by BetOnline.ag. In football, it's back and better than ever. And BetOnline.ag, it's got a new web interface for the start of the basketball season as well. And there are more props, odds, and lines than ever before because BetOnline remains your number one spot for all your sports action this season. So head to that new updated desktop or go on your mobile right now to sign up today. Receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use promo code BELEAV50, BLEAV50 to receive that bonus. All sorts of sports across the board. Write down your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. Bet online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. Bet online, where the game starts. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for coming into the pod. We got a heartbreaker on our hands right here. The Chicago Bears lose to the Pittsburgh Steelers 29-27 in week 9 on a last-second 40-yard field goal by Chris Boswell, a last-second 65-yard miss by Cairo Santos. You know, it was a tale of two halves. That second one got crazy. Let's bring in my co-host, former Chicago Bears defensive end and Fox 32 Chicago's very own, Corey Wooten. What is up, Corey? How heavy is your heart today?
it's really heavy because that was a tough one. I mean, ups and downs of the game, kind of looking like there's no chance, like same old Bears, and then all of a sudden they come back and get to a point, you know, where, you know, they have a big third down, you know, it's 23-20. We get off the field with the sack, we think, and then the big penalty there. I don't know what was going on, but that ref, I'll tell you, he was having a bad day. Because he was going to flag him, and it looked like he kind of like bumped into him on purpose.
He was the guy like in the grocery store who's not getting out of the way, and then you hold off for a second, and then you try and move around him, and he still kind of like bumps you, and you're like, "What's this guy's deal?" It's crazy.
Exactly. I'm from New Jersey, and there's a lot of Tommy Tough guys we call them. You know, guys that try to get in your way or something. And hey, what are you pushing me, huh? What are you tough guy, huh? Nah. That's what that ref was doing. I'm like, come on. He was pulling the flag and bumped into him before anything even happened. All he did was look at the sideline. He didn't say, like, you know, Degeneration X, like, suck it or, you know, something crazy like that. Literally, he looked at the sideline and walked back. What is the problem, right? If somebody gets a sack, sometimes they stare at people, you know, cross their arms, and that's it, right? He didn't do anything crazy. But that's a huge momentum thing. And obviously, you know, people are going to say that was, you know, the deal breaker in the game. It's a huge play. And
well, it's 3 points, right? They went down and they kicked the field goal afterwards. So, I mean,
exactly.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Chicago, Justin Fields and company, you know, had the touchdown to, you know, Darnell Mooney, and, you know, a different ball game if that doesn't happen. You know, not saying we're going to score the same way, but if we score a touchdown, game's over. You know what I mean? So it's tough to lose like that, especially, you know, some calls you're like, okay, you know, maybe missing a holding call or something like that. But like, you know, that kind of call by a ref is very disheartening to see, especially in this day and age in the league.
Yeah, Corey, let's just, before we get into the game, let's just stick with the thing, because obviously a lot of people are talking about it, and it's, I think it's kind of entered the sports zeitgeist for the next couple of days. And, you know, Tony Corrente's got a lot to answer for. Where do we go with this taunting penalty, right? Because as a lawyer, if I was Cassius Marsh's lawyer, I'd go over and I'd be like, Yana, who was he taunting? Like, who was he looking at? And that could, you know what I mean? Like, he could have been looking at the crowd. He could have been staring. So now we can't have our entire body pointed in the general direction of an opponent after a play.
Yeah, I mean,
is this one of those rules, Corey, where next year – they're going to get rid of it or reinterpret it? You're going to look back
I think so.
Be like, man, this was crazy BS.
Yeah. I think it was like the emphasis, you know, every year, you know, when we used to play, they'd have like a rules meeting in training camp, right? Where they go over, okay, what's the emphasis rule this year? And I'm sure this year was taunting. Anybody that taunts, you know, we're going to crack down on you, and there's going to be no place for that. And I think it's kind of ridiculous. You know, we've kind of touched on it in some earlier podcasts. I think the football game itself, people get excited about, you know, people making a play and looking at somebody, staring at somebody down. Like, that's what makes football football, right? You go across the middle and you get popped, clean hit with your shoulder, and the you know, wide receiver goes down. You know, it used to be you stand over him and you flex your chest at him. That's what it was. You just let him know that this is my zone, and if you're coming across the middle, I'm gonna make you feel pain. And that's what people love to see. You know, think about guys like, you know, Ronnie Lott, Brian Dawkins, you know, guys like that, they'll come downhill and made a living on, you know, destroying people. That wouldn't be able to happen now, you know, honestly, you know, with the way the rules are, you know, I agree with the making it safer, but as far as taunting, you know, I think if you're standing over somebody for a long period of time and you're not letting them get up, this, that, and the other, yeah, that should be a flag. But if you hit somebody real quick, you stand over them and, you know, do something, like, it shouldn't be a flag. And I just, it takes the fun out of it, you know, not only for the players, but the fans. We want to see that, right? Don't you want to see when somebody gets a huge sack to do whatever celebration they want to?
Yeah, we were like, me and my buddies were like, look at him snap on that roundhouse. That's what we were talking about, right? And we were entertained and we were laughing by it. And obviously, clearly, you know, his emotion and his passion, he just should have remembered what direction he was pointing his emotion, Corey. Because
exactly.
And this is the problem. And look, we can nail on, bang on Corenti all we want to, but if this is the rule, we're asking them to interpret expression. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of details. This is a complicated thing, this thing called life, right? And Cassius March is a former Pittsburgh Steeler who was on their practice squad. He used to be in camp with them. So for him to not get some sort of satisfaction out of coming into the game in a big moment and picking up a sack, and I'm sorry, maybe just looking across that sideline being like, hey, do you remember me a little bit? Like, I don't know. I think that's the spirit of competitiveness. And then on top of that interpretation, the illegal cutback – that never happened, Corey. Can you talk on that a little bit? You know, what is and what is outside the tight end box on this one? Corenti after the game said, well, it looked like he wanted to initiate it. Well, you can initiate all you want, but if you whiff by 3 or 4 yards, it's not a penalty. I don't get that one either.
Exactly. I think it's a thing where, you know, they have so much emphasis in their head of things like the illegal cut blocks and this taunting, that sometimes they try to look for things that aren't there, right? Obviously seen him go down for the cut block, but he whiffed. Like, that's not a penalty. If you don't touch anybody, that's not a big deal, right? It could be a thing where, you know, the refs warn that, you know, and say, hey, listen, next time, you know, if he connects with him, this is a cut block and we'll get fined for it and there'll be a flag and this, that, and the other. But if he obviously whiffed, that can't be a penalty, right? That's like saying, you know, oh, you know, you're going to get a, you know, hands to the face penalty when it didn't even happen. Like, this doesn't make any sense. So I just think they need to get better. And sometimes when you put an emphasis on stuff, all these refs look for stuff that's maybe not there. You know, it's like if you're always like looking for something like, oh, did he do that or did he not? I can't really tell. I saw him go low. I didn't really see anything. And they get nervous that if they don't call it, they're going to get in trouble, you know, from whoever the supervisor or, you know, whoever that is. Maybe it's Dean Blandino in New York saying, you know what, you should have called that. You know, so maybe they get nervous about things like that. But yeah, it's just taking away the fun out of the game. You know, obviously they're trying to make things safer. I agree with that, but I mean, taunting, come on, who's going to get hurt from that, right? Maybe your pride a little bit, maybe your ego.
Yeah.
But, you know, I understand the cut block thing, but if you're not touched, how is it a cut block? It doesn't make any sense. So,
yeah. And maybe my final question, and then I want to move on to Justin Fields because there's a lot to talk about with Justin Fields. It has me very, very excited. Yeah. But my final one is, what is your impression on, because I'm starting to pick up on this just as a fan and as an observer. Mm-hmm. You know, that's our third unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. We're second in the NFL in personal fouls. We had 12 penalties last night. We're averaging 7.4 a game. Is there anything to, in your opinion, playing the game for as many years as you did? Just for me personally, like, I'm going to use an analogy when I used to work at a restaurant. And when a manager comes in, maybe he gets it from on high. He goes, you know what? Too many employees have been late lately. So we need you to kind of clean that up. And sometimes you look at the dude or the lady who is late most often and try and maybe keep an extra eye on them sometimes. It just sort of feels like this undisciplined nature that the Bears have been exhibiting now for over a month. It's definitely catching up to them. I kind of sort of feel like, I don't want to say that the refs are targeting them, but when we're talking about point of emphasis and we're talking about stuff that, you know, they walk into a game knowing, the Bears are on the other side of the ones that are more likely to have these situations happen. Yeah. Do you buy into that where, like, it's sometimes, I don't know if it's a chicken and the egg, but the more undisciplined a team is, the more the referees might be willing to call certain stuff, and it goes back in both ways and it continues to snowball?
Yeah, well, I think the thing that people don't realize is refs before every game, they look at, you know, the tape of the Bears or the Steelers, and they kind of know certain tendencies, right? They know maybe TJ Watt is cheating the line of scrimmage. He could possibly be offsides, right? So that could be something. Yeah, exactly. So they put an emphasis on it, and, you know, they might be more likely to throw a flag or something like that. Or if they know, you know, Jason Peters likes to get outside with his right hand, or Cody Whitehair blocking, they'll make a mental note of that, and they'll kind of zone in. So people sleep on the fact that refs do watch film too. And every crew, they're going to have an emphasis like, okay, you know, the Bears are very penalized, you know, a lot of holding penalties. They like to keep their hands outside at times, you know, within the tackle box. And we're going to keep an extra eye on that. So that's why you see some of these extra calls. And knowing, you know, that people are constantly calling it against you, you think you'd make a mental note. Okay, let me make my hands inside. And then, hey, after the play, you know, a guy like Mario Edwards, hey, let me just go back to the huddle right now. Let me not, you know, do this extra stuff because they're calling it, right? We're seeing trends. And the thing is, you know, the Bears in general, I can just tell right now as a team through the coaching, they don't seem like a very disciplined team, you know, because penalties, that's, especially last game, 12 penalties, that's way too many. Crazy. You cannot win games in this league. And they almost won, you know, it got to a point where, you know, but you cannot win games in this league being that highly penalized and on a weekly basis. Like, it's not like just, oh, this was a rare thing. They are the more penalized team usually every week. So it comes down to the coaching staff. They got to put an emphasis on it, you know, and it comes to a point where you're like, hey, listen, if you're gonna have all these penalties, you're gonna hurt us, right? In the long. So maybe it's lighting some fire under them. You know, I know they're all pros, but hey, maybe not giving, you know, certain people as much, you know, playing time on the defensive side. If things keep popping up where you're hurting, you know, a guy like Mario Edwards or something like that, like, hey, let's give him less reps if he's not gonna, you know, follow these rules and the trends that are going on. So yeah, I think they have to clean it up. And I think this is the reason why the record is the way it is. You know, it's not by accident, you know. And when I look at defense, right, you look at, you know, in the prior year, especially when Vic Fangio was there, he stressed the importance of discipline, gap assignment. And every week we see, you know, a breakdown in the gaps. And, you know, this guy's supposed to spill and he doesn't, you know, he stays outside and tight joints it. And then there's a touchdown run with Najee Harris, things like that just continue to add up. So it just tells me that they're not a very disciplined ball club and they haven't done anything to correct it.
Yeah. And look, we're not trying to, especially with last night, like I hate crying penalties, but you know, you start to kind of go to the source of it a little bit and where's it coming from? And yeah, what do we keep seeing over and over again? Personal fouls, offsides or neutral zone stuff, and illegal men downfield on offense. I think we've seen that
all the time.
So Corey, can you explain that to me? What is that about? Is that offensive line discipline? Is that just not being in sync with the way a play develops? What is that?
Yeah, I think it's sometimes because they have different options, right? It may be a designed what they think is a run play, and Justin Fields puts his own flair on it. So then these offensive linemen are down the field. Could be a miscommunication. Maybe, you know, on the road, he's trying to relay the play to them and he thinks it's this, they think it's this. So it's just kind of miscommunication. And you remember I told you about the crowd noise, how that plays such a huge factor, right?
Loud last night, man.
So yeah, you know, my host, Gabe Ramirez, he was at the game in Pittsburgh at Heinz Field, and he said that place was rocking. He put some Instagram videos, terrible towels. I mean, it's a tough place to play. We talked about how Justin Fields really struggles on the road, getting those checks, this, that, and the other. So that's why you see a lot of these penalties. I think they're just not on the same page. And Justin Fields is different than Andy Dalton, right? He can make something out of nothing. So, you know, maybe design run that kind of, you know, falls apart. You know, he can possibly boot it and look down the field for a pass option. So I think they just need to get on the same page and let these, you know, offensive linemen know that, hey, there's a chance that he could, you know, do a pass here. And if they could do that, we won't see as many down the field. Because it's been too much. Ever since Justin Fields has been the starter and played, there's been too many of those illegal man downfields, and it's every week. So they just need to get back to the basics and fundamentals. They have to know their job like the back of their hand, everybody. They got to be in sync with Justin Fields. Justin Fields has to be in sync with the O-line. And I think people really sleep on the importance of him not having these offseason reps with the ones. you know, and it's
we're seeing it
gotten better. Yeah, it's gotten better every game. You know, I think these past two games leaps and bounds, right? But there's still a lot of stuff that happens in the offseason that Justin Fields just didn't get. You know, Andy Dalton had all those reps. So we're kind of seeing them, you know, feel off each other and gel. And it sucks. It has to be on the fly. You know, if all things, I mean, Justin Fields should have been the starter from day one and we should have had all these prep and everything, but it didn't work out that way. So things are on the fly. But the one good thing is, I mean, he continues to get better. And honestly, without that pick, I mean, and you really can't blame that. I mean, Cam Hayward,
I mean, he's, you got to give it up
the league and bat down passes. You know, he's an absolute force in there. One of the most underrated. We were talking with Ike and Mark, one of the most underrated D tackles in the game. I mean, that's just one of those lucky plays where he puts his hands up. He got it. Great play by him. But that's not on Justin Fields. I mean, you know, it comes down as a pick. But in my opinion, it wasn't a terrible throw. It wasn't something, you know, where he just threw it up through a prayer. You know, he continues to get better. And, you know, like you said about putting that safety belt on, that seat belt, you know, he's looking pretty dang good. You know, I think the past 2 weeks, it gives me a lot of confidence in him. And I think the whole world is seeing that, you know, in Chicago, Justin Fields is that dude. He's going to be that franchise dude. And it's really fun to see him develop in such a short period of time.
Well, yeah. And a couple things. Well, the first one is, I think we're going to see it's almost a small thing, but I think if we're able to somehow clean up those situations where, again, in that first half, how many times were we second and 21? How many times were we second and 12 and 13? I don't even care if you're a rookie or maybe an 8 or 9 year veteran. Those down and distances are just going to be problems for any quarterback under there. Once we kind of got out of that a little bit in that second half, Justin Fields, 228 passing yards. He was 9 of 16 on passes beyond 10 yards. He was averaging what? I think he was averaging something like 12 air yards per attempt. He had 45 rush yards. And yeah, Corey, man, let's really start to dive into this, right? Because let's just kind of take it back like to week one. We saw Andy Dalton and we said, this is kind of a waste of our time. He got in against, you know, week two against Justin Fields, and we saw some of those raw kind of moments. And Corey, man, you were kind of on it early where you were like, you know, man, this breakout performance, it's coming. It's coming. Well, you know, a few game plans, you know, a few tough moments, and maybe, you know, maybe a couple of rough starts by Justin Fields later. Yeah, man, we're now 2 weeks into, I think, the first actual real glimpse of what this guy can be in this NFL. And all the stuff that we've kind of thought and seen in the mental makeup and all the physical skills are starting to come together. So just talk about, man, like the decisiveness. In my head, when I'm watching him, 1-2, not there, tuck it and go. You said that a couple weeks ago. Exactly. And he is doing that now to great success. All of a sudden now, he is getting around the edge, right? There aren't a lot of, like, all of a sudden, D linemen can't catch him, which we thought was going to happen, which was starting to happen when he first came out. It's all really starting to build on itself, and I know that it's a really tough loss last night, but these are kind of those moments that I think Bears fans knew what was going to happen was a loss, but Justin Fields looks great. So how do you pick and parcel with that, right? So, I mean, let's just dive into Justin Fields, what you saw just in this last game, and I don't know, man, maybe on that road with that seatbelt, maybe we're going to enter one of those open fields for a little bit, and maybe I think he's sort of coming together. I see consistency possibly in our future.
You know what I see, you know, what really scared me about this game, I talked about it, was the crowd noise, right, and playing against T.J. Watt. And T.J. Watt had 3 sacks, you know, it is what it is, you know, but I didn't think it was a game where the Pittsburgh Steelers completely dominated them. I didn't think it was that. But what I love from Justin Fields is his confidence. You know, I feel like if he would have got sacked 3 times by the same person in weeks prior, it would have gotten his head. And, you know, he would have been a little skittish in the pocket and things of that nature. But you didn't see that. You saw the decisiveness. You saw him, you know, sticking with 1-2 and then tuck it and go. And that's what I love, because it's such a different element. You know, when you have that, it's a nightmare for defensive coordinators. And, you know, Ike Taylor had talked about, well, you know, they have a lot of experience with, from the Ravens, Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. Yeah, going against him twice a year. But, I mean, Justin Fields, you know, is a way better passer. I mean, nothing to take away from Lamar Jackson, but you know what, I know it, everybody out there. Justin Fields is a pure passer that can run like Lamar Jackson, if not better at times. So it's unbelievable to see such a young guy come along. Because think about, you know, when we saw some of these losses, we were like, oh my gosh, like panic mode, right? But then seeing him bounce back, you know, the last week and then this past week, it's impressive. And I think if he can continue to do that, the 1-2, tuck it and go, and just really feel comfortable in the pocket. And what I love now is the fact that he's utilizing the tight end position, right? Because I think that's such a different element. You look at how Big Ben is really comfortable with his tight end. And then every other quarterback out there, it seems like, you know, once you have that good tight end connection, it makes everything that much easier because you don't have to force anything on the edge, right? You have the zone beaters across the middle. You got a sure target, you know, an instant first down at times. You know, Jimmy Graham was in there, Cole Kmet. I just love the mixing and matching. And I thought this was his most balanced passing performance. You know, look at the targets on there. You know, he had Allen Robinson, Darnell Mooney, Cole Kmet, Goodwin had that nice 50-yard bomb. Yeah. And that's the situation where maybe if he would have hit him a step earlier, you know, that he could have been running, that could have been possibly a touchdown. But hey, it's still great to see these long passes because for the Bears, what has been the talk of them the past, you know, since Jay Cutler has been there? Oh, we can't do the long ball. Mitch and then, you know, Nick Foles and Andy Dalton, nothing above 10 yards. What we're seeing is stretching the field, right, which is great because not only do we have a guy that can tuck it and run when we need to, he can stand in the pocket, you know, see the pressure in there and complete an absolute strike to guys down the field. And, you know, what we saw was Mooney as his favorite target, you know, and this, I loved it because he wasn't locking in on anybody like we've seen in prior weeks. He was kind of taking it as it comes. What is the defense giving me, right? And that's huge progress, Joey, because, you know, in the weeks prior, he was like, okay, this is my read and this is what I'm going to do. What I saw was
do the right thing. Here. Okay, yeah, no. Do the right thing. Yep.
Exactly. Now he's looking at there. It's not there. Okay, what's right there? Okay, that's there. Boom. And if it's not there, tuck it and go. Love that. Love that progression. And as you see, you know, time go on, especially on the road, that's what I love. Because in the weeks prior, you know, the Browns game, some of these bad losses, Tampa Bay, we saw him look frantic at times. Yeah. And in this place, Pittsburgh, one of the hardest places to play, in my opinion, for an opposing quarterback, he looked very comfortable. And that's what I love to see. You know, after the interception happened, you know, he wiped it off. And in the second half, when the game was on the line, when we needed scores, he stepped up big. I love what I saw. Like, for you, do you notice the confidence? Like, I know for me, like, just seeing it, do you notice that confidence with him?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the demeanor hasn't really changed for me, even when he walks off the field. I don't know. It's the one of those body language things. So in that Browns game, you know, I was just kind of waiting for him, like, please don't cry in your first game. You know what I mean? Because, you know, it was just really bad. Of course, he wasn't going to do that. I'm totally being, like, you know, tongue-in-cheek about that. But, yeah, no, there's something about what he's going through right now, which I hope continues, is I always felt like, and I hate to bring it back, when I felt like with Mitch was a people pleaser. And you know what? He wanted to do it not just for his teammates, but for his coach, for his mom watching home, and every single Bears fan out there. And look, that's a cool thing to have inside of your heart, but I don't know if that necessarily leads to successful football. With Justin Fields, I think he was starting to do that. You know, run the right play, play within the system. You know, we just went over this in tape, so make sure, you know, wait for this play to develop and this second layer, all this other stuff. But now I think he's getting comfortable enough where he knows the plays. He's got the cadence down. I think he knows, like, you know, what his offensive line is and is not going to do a little bit more on a week-to-week basis. And I think he's just playing a little bit more on feel. And I think he goes, you know, the decisions that I make are going to be best for the football team. And that's kind of what I'm seeing right now. And, man, we saw some great throws last night. I want to throw it back at you. You know, a lot to choose from. For a former NFL player, which throw do you really sticks out of, like, you know, this guy is starting to come. Like, this confidence is starting to happen. Was it the Darnell Mooney throw? Was it that needle seam thing, Jimmy Graham? Some of the connections to Kmet, the teardrop to Allen Robinson. If you could pick one, what was it that meant, oh, man, we might have a dude?
So what really stands out to me, and talk about tight windows, right? When I looked at the tight end position, right, the one to Jimmy Graham where he completely threaded the needle. Mm-hmm. And some of them to Cole Kmet where he was double covered. And he's like, listen, I'm going to put it through this window. I'm going to throw an absolute bullet.
And he was avoiding those. He had been avoiding those, and he started doing those.
Exactly, because he has a different type of arm strength that not everybody has in this league, right? Andy Dalton doesn't have that. Nick Foles doesn't have that. Some guys do not have that, right? And to see him – you know, put it in such a tight window and say, this, he's covered, but now, no, I'm going to make him open and throw it right on the money. And kudos to Cole Kmet. I mean, this was one of his best games, in my opinion. I mean, because we had been waiting, right? Last year, we didn't see much from early on in the season, not as many targets. And then slowly we see him and Justin Fields, you know, building that connection in there. And it's going to be amazing because, like I said, every great team out there has a great QB tight end connection, right? And then you look at, once this gets, what we need is a little bit more in the red zone with them, because I think it's going to be an X factor, right, in the red zone. Because you look at this game and, you know, two field goals in the red zone. If we could potentially, you know, get some targets to Cole Kmet in the red zone, I think that's a difference maker. You know, you look at Ben Roethlisberger, him targeting his tight end twice in the red zone. And it's just such a tough matchup, because you got a guy 6'5" in Cole Kmet that's 265, 270, strong, can use his body. Now he's comfortable with his hands, right? That was kind of the knock on him. He's catching the ball. So I want to see that in the red zone, really open that up, because I think that would be a security blanket. And that's the situation where, like, hey, in the red zone, let's target Cole Kmet. Hey, Jimmy Graham, we know what he's been able to do. You know, a couple of years ago, he had a lot of tight ends in the red, a lot of touchdowns in the red zone. So I think that's going to be an X factor going forward if we want to have success, right? Replacing some of these field goals with touchdowns, and I think it starts with the tight end position.
Man, that's such a great call, because I was just thinking inside my head, you know, if a person walked up to me that hadn't watched Bears football all season and they went, you know, hey, Corey, hey, Joey, when the Bears get in the red zone, who do they like to throw to? We'd go, we don't know. We really don't know, right? I mean, Darnell Mooney aside, he had a great game last night and made a great catch in the fourth quarter. That's awesome. But in terms of in those moments, I don't know if Darnell Mooney is exactly the guy you want to consistently scheme up. You need physicality. You need size in the red zone, right? So, yeah, exactly. Is it Cole Kmet? Is it Allen Robinson? Is it something else? And obviously they love doing that kind of little gadget play. But, yeah, that's going to be really huge. Who is that guy? Who and can that player know in that moment that we're going to be depending upon you when we get in the red zone for some targets? You better be ready. This isn't just when your number gets called. These are the guys that we're going to be looking for. And that's going to be an interesting thing to move over in the next couple of weeks. I want to get your take on, you know, what you thought from David Montgomery. I have a couple of different thoughts. Like, my first one, obviously, is I want to get your thought on the Wildcat, which we actually ran with success. Now that David Montgomery's back in, it definitely helped them out a whole lot. It felt like Justin Fields enjoyed having Montgomery in the backfield. You know, maybe a rookie running back on a pass protection play.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's something that had him a little bit, skittish in the past couple of weeks. But, you know, Montgomery, not flashy, but it looked like he played pretty solid. He looked pretty good.
Exactly. He had a great burst. So what I see is, you know, he looks fully recovered from the knee injury.
Yes.
And, you know, I think Khalil Herbert playing the way he was maybe accelerated this comeback, because Khalil Herbert was playing lights out. I mean, honestly, you know, and, you know, it really accelerates people that, okay, yeah, listen, people are talking good things about Khalil Herbert. Let me get back on this field and show them who David Montgomery is, all right?
I love it.
But you saw some burst in there early on, and just his power. I mean, he has a different level of power, you know, in my opinion, very similar to a guy like Marshawn Lynch, like center of gravity, super strong lower body, upper body, the whole bit. But David Montgomery looks extremely quick. I feel like over the years since he's been here, he looks quicker, in my opinion. And it's great to have him back, because I think he is a factor in there. And I think Justin Fields feels very comfortable handing the ball off. You know, obviously we want to get him more than 13 carries out there, but averaging almost 5 yards a pop, I mean, that's pretty good. And then you throw in some of those Wildcats where, again, Darnell Mooney's having some long runs, and then it sets up things, and then we're able to get a touchdown. So I think it just provides a different element, you know, as defenses are worried, okay, let's worry about Justin Fields. Okay. And then you have David Montgomery back there. Then you have Darnell Mooney, and they're worried about what they're going to do, you know, with two running backs there as well. So it's just a different element that kind of gets in the defense's head, and we're able to get a touchdown of it. So hopefully we can continue to get the running game, because I think this has been one of our lowest running game performances, I think. But, you know, all things aside, I liked, you know, the yards per carry, little more carries out there, but you know, it was great to have David Montgomery back. And I think going forward, we're going to have to mix and match this run and pass.
No, you're right. They only picked up, I think, 136 on the ground, which is still pretty decent by NFL standards, but we've been over 150 consistently
exactly
the last 3 weeks. So it did come back a little bit, but you know, I do find it interesting. And you know, we do have to give a little bit of credit to Bill Lazor and the coaching staff, because we like to criticize them about game plan all the time. But so far, when they've brought up those wildcat calls, for the most part, they worked last night, right? That's Khalil Herbert had his best run. I think it was like 8 or 9 yards up the gut. The Darnell Mooney 15-yarder. And Montgomery has been making really smart decisions with the football when he gets tight to him. So I'll be honest with you, I'm into it. I'm not saying give me more. But again, this Bears offense, we can't forget this, that this Pittsburgh Steelers, legit defense. San Francisco 49ers, my opinion, also legit defense. Against the Steelers last night, 414 total yards. That's a lot for Chicago Bears territory, right? Justin Fields now, 300 plus all-purpose yards his last two games. That is not something to wag your finger at. And look, I know we're 3-6, but we're going to go on bye. We come back and we play the Ravens and the Lions. And in my opinion, those are two defenses that are very beatable. So I think now this is about, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about wins and losses towards the end of the pod. But, you know, after the bye now, they can get their bodies right, come back, hopefully get a little bit healthier, especially on the defensive end, and maybe come back and really start to, dare I say, build something offensively. I mean, the window is kind of open there right now, and I think Justin Fields is getting to the point now where he's comfortable and we're starting to see that confidence where I think this could happen.
Exactly, yeah. I love what I see, and I look at this season right now at the point, right, where it's kind of like at that point where, like, most fans, you and me probably included, were like, hey, I don't know about playoffs this year. We really don't know. You know, obviously there's a chance – and you can never say never, but the way the season is going right now, looks like that might not be a possibility, right? You know, just with the way they've been playing, the lack of consistency in certain areas. But what I do know is offensively, with Justin Fields, we see progress. And not only are Bears fans noticing, but the whole world, you know, football fans all across, they're seeing, like, okay, this is why Chicago drafted him. You know, looking at different, you know, comments and videos, we're saying, wow, Chicago finally has their QB. And think about it. He hasn't even touched his full potential yet. This is a sample size, Joey.
Oh, no, okay? Yeah, this was not a consistent, like, full four-quarter effort, right? And he, by the way, real quick, just to throw this out there, PFF just released their grades. Highest graded quarterback in week 9, Justin Fields.
Exactly. And this was an okay performance, right? Like, he had times where you're like, oh my goodness, but think of what it could be if he starts that from the beginning, right? A consistent four quarter performance. We may be talking 400 something yards, Joey. I mean, he looked impressive out there.
Yeah, 17 completions, 291 yards. Typically in the NFL, you get to that 25 to 30 area. Just do the math, people. That's 400 yards. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think, you know, people have to realize this is just a sample size. Right. And we haven't even fully unlocked the offensive potential. Right. Because right now what I talked about is dumbing it down. Right. Bill Lazor, you know, Matt Nagy, they're kind of like, OK, listen, this is where we struggle. Right. Justin Fields was holding the ball too long. He was getting sacked. You know, he wasn't able to feel comfortable in it. OK, how do we get him comfortable? OK, he's comfortable running. Right. So let's look one. The first read, second read, tuck it and go. Right. And when it's not there, that's a game changer, right? Because every defense is like, oh my gosh, you see how fast this dude is, right? And then, okay, you know, we got to worry about him running. And then what is he going to do? He's going to drop back, you know, step up and throw an absolute bullet in there that we have to defend, right? That's hard to pick, you know? So I think it's home. I'm just really excited about it because I don't even think he's scratched the surface of his potential. That's saying something. I think, you know, people are seeing the progress, but it's not even close. And I think as the season goes on and he becomes more comfortable, watch out. And, you know, going forward, he is the Bears' future quarterback, the franchise guy that we like to keep for 12 to 20 years, possibly, you know, depending on health and this, that, and the other. But Chicago finally has a franchise quarterback that is a dude in all facets, right? Not just a guy that can run the ball and pass it occasionally. No, he can pass the ball down the field, right? And that's something that we've been missing for a while, you know, and it's great to see. It feels great, man, because, you know, I think people sleep on how rare that is to have a guy that can be that fast and then still, you know, be an amazing passer with a cannon of an arm. I mean, cannon. You know, you just don't see that, right? You know, you look at some of the quarterbacks out there, right? Like we said, Lamar Jackson, right? Very good runner, passing sometimes very mediocre, right? He doesn't have these same throws like Justin Fields where you're like, wow, you know, and that's the guy that won an MVP. So think about it. He is Lamar Jackson on steroids, in my opinion. You know, he is unbelievable. He has an arm like Aaron Rodgers, but he can run like Michael Vick.
Yeah, and he's twice the size of Kyler Murray.
No
shade of Kyler Murray, but I mean, you know, yeah. Justin Fields is big. Exactly.
But the point I'm making is that he's just a combination of all the right things, and what we see is progress, right? And this is a Bears team that's trying to figure things out, game planning, scheme wise. The coaching has kind of been in disarray, but I just love what I see from them, and it just makes me very excited for the future. So in my head right now, I'm like, hey, whatever happens this season, I'm almost really not worried about it, because I'm like, as long as we can get progress with him, you know. And some of the young guys offensively, that's what I'm really focused on, because I know, you know, next year they're going to beef up the O-line for sure. You know, Tevin Jenkins is eventually going to be back. They're probably going to get another tackle. We know that, right? So it just makes me very excited. Then they're going to continue to add weapons for them. And it just makes me very excited, man. So Bears fans, regardless of how you feel, and I know the season hasn't gone the way we want to, but I think you can rest assured that Justin Fields is progressing the way we want him to. And it hasn't been pretty at times, but we see progress and we see things to make everyone very excited about the future.
Yeah, very well said. And, you know, in terms of this, we're at this point in the season, right? And I think maybe a lot of Bears fans in the back of their head knew that, you know, every Sunday you want to hope that the Bears win and you're always going to root for them to win. But we were always kind of worried that this was a situation of, the Bears are going to lose. We hope the guy Justin Fields looks good, and kind of sort of manage that as we move along. Now, I think the coaching staff is still in a lot of trouble. I don't know exactly how they turn that around. And look, you know, at 3-6, it's really daunting, right? You got to go 6-2 the rest of the way. And you still have the Ravens, the Packers, the Vikings twice, the Seahawks, and the Cardinals still on the schedule. So, yeah. You know what I mean? So honestly, these next three games, you know, the Ravens at home, Detroit on Thanksgiving, the Cardinals at home, December 5th, you kind of need to win all those three. I'm just putting that out there if you want to actually be in the playoff picture. But in terms of Justin Fields, you know, I think obviously on field we want consistency. We want to see him continue to, like, you know, build upon these habits and these instincts that he's growing in the NFL realm. In your opinion, how important would it be for you to see Justin Fields pick up a signature win against one of those teams? Does that mean a lot to you, mean a little bit to you, or that can also go a long way?
You know, I think a signature win is huge. And I think if they can pull a win, I honestly think the Ravens game, I think that's a very winnable game, right?
I agree. But
that would be considered a signature win. In my mind, I don't think so. I think the Detroit game, that's a win.
Got to take care of it.
That's a win.
5-6.
Arizona, that's the difference maker. And what I think, though, honestly, and I'm going to make a crazy prediction that my people say I'm crazy, right?
I might agree with you.
You look at what these two quarterbacks are, right? Kyler Murray, you know, Justin Fields. And I think Justin Fields, he's a competitor, right? And he's saying, oh yeah, Kyler Murray can run, he can pass the ball, this. And say, no, I can do it better. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, I think he's going to have his breakout game against the Cardinals. Like where we're like, whoa. Like where he really goes
three
ham.
Scores.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think everything's going to come together because, you know, what I see is progress, right? At Heinz Field, being able to have one of his best performances with the crowd noise. And that just lets me know he's becoming comfortable with the silent count and relaying everything to the offensive linemen, you know, the receivers, the running backs. I see progress there. And I think he's just going to continue to get better. And I think this game, you know, it's going to be like a thing where, you know, they always comparing this person, that person. He's like, okay, Kyler Murray, Justin Fields. That's going to be the whole talk that week. And I think he's going to have that signature performance because he's a competitor. You know, when he's had bad games, he's bounced back. And that's been since his high school days. You know, Ohio State, he plays bad against Northwestern. Then he comes back against Clemson and goes toe-to-toe with Trevor Lawrence, outplaying him. So when he has a thing like that, they're saying, oh, these are the two quarterbacks, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields. Who's going to do better? Justin Fields outplayed him, right? He likes to prove himself. And I think this is a game where he's like, hey, Kyler Murray, there's a lot of buzz about him. People say he's that dude. I'm that dude too. All right. Y'all gonna see.
Yeah, and down the road too. I mean, one, when you look at it, Arizona in December in the Chicago cold, I like that as a matchup. Also, too, look, I think Arizona is a great – I think they're one of the better teams in the NFL. Maybe they're the class of the NFC right now, but they're not going to go 15-2, okay? It's just not going to happen. They are going to lose some games eventually. Chase Edmonds is out for multiple weeks. Kyler's been a little banged up. Obviously, he didn't play this last week. And DeAndre Hopkins. Let's just kind of see where they're at in 3 weeks. And again, Bears fans, I will just throw – I'm going to throw this one out there. Just keep in mind, I know we're 3-6, and we're not going to the playoffs, and everything sucks. But, and this isn't a linear path, but if we continue to have these Justin Fields performances, and dare I say, we're just scratching the surface of that, when you have a quarterback in the NFL, guess what? You can win every week. We haven't had that. We haven't had that. Yeah. So, you know, I as much as I want to bury – and get out the shovel and start tossing dirt on this Bears season. I'm not exactly ready to do that just yet. They're going to go on bye. They're going to get healthier. Got to get Khalil Mack healthy. Got to get Eddie Jackson healthy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Get all those dudes ready to roll. And then we'll kind of see how it sort of shakes out moving forward. We got to transition to the defense just real quick.
Yeah.
You know, I started talking about it a couple weeks ago about this defense just kind of not, of course, in the here and now kind of scaring me because the schedule's been tough, but just in the future, just in general, I want to start here where the Pittsburgh Steelers seem to do a really nice job of using end arounds and jet sweeps and other kinds of things to kind of break, and what Brian Griese said on the telecast, stress gap discipline last night. Can you talk a little bit about that? Was that obviously that was a game plan meant to kind of break the Bears? Is that because they've been having problems with gap discipline, or that just kind of tried to take away maybe one of their strengths?
Yeah, I think that's been the theme that I've talked about all year, the lack of gap discipline, like something that we've seen under Vic Fangio that was very good. And then as the years gone on, Chuck Pagano, Sean Desai, it's gotten worse, right? And, you know, what they try to do with those end arounds, you know, motion here and there, they try to trick you, right, get you off your job. And remember I talked about the tight defensive end, most of the time he has to spill it, right? But if he gets influenced by the end around, that fake end around, then his eyes are there and they're able to run like the Najee Harris touchdown. You know, that's something that just that, you know, influence at the end, he doesn't crash down the way he needs to. He doesn't spill it to the linebacker, right? And then there's a big open gap. So that was their plan, because they're like, listen, Chicago is not a very disciplined team when it comes to the running game, and we're going to try to attack that, right? Because I think Pittsburgh knows that they're not the offense they used to be with Big Ben. They know
they don't run that often. That was a specific thing to play against.
Exactly.
Them. Yeah.
Exactly. So they thought like this: listen, the only way we're going to beat Chicago is if we exploit their deficiencies in the run game. And that's exactly what they did, right? The numbers weren't crazy that Pittsburgh did rushing wise, but when they needed to score, when they needed yards, they were able to do it. And that's something that's very surprising just because of the history of the Chicago Bears defense, right? Rush defense has always been there, right? What does it do? It sets up the pass defense, right? With the sacks, with the turnovers, the blitzes, things of that nature. We just don't see that. Why? Because they cannot stop the run, right? And there's a correlation to teams that can stop the run, pin their ears back, dial up blitzes, you know, getting turnovers, things of that nature, and helping a young quarterback. We just haven't seen that, right? If we would have had the same defense in 2018, right now, oh my gosh.
And Corey, isn't that a part of the problem, though, where, like, look, it's just Akeem Hicks and guys like Eddie Goldman. Akeem Hicks, when he's healthy, when he's right, still a difference maker. But he isn't always healthy and right. Are we still kind of – unfortunately sort of kind of crossing our fingers and hoping that these guys can suit up and get out there? I saw Hickson was in and out of the game a whole lot. It's just kind of one of those things where, unfortunately, really good player, had some great years for us, but now it's just something we're gonna have to maybe eventually move on from those guys, because I don't know if we can depend on them and on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, I think it's a situation where you look at the numbers and what he wants and you know, what he's asking for, because I think what I do know is when he's out there and he's healthy, he's a factor. I mean, he is the engine that runs that defense. He's the vocal leader. He sparks everything. Look at what he did for Khalil Mack. And Khalil Mack is an absolute beast, whether Akeem Hicks is there or not. But Khalil Mack didn't have a defensive end like Robert Quinn opposite him for years, right? Mm-hmm. But what happened was a guy like Akeem Hicks, the influence he has inside, you know, pushing the pocket, taking on two defenders, it really allowed Khalil Mack to really have some one-on-ones in there. And, you know, the thing is, quarterback couldn't step up. So what do? Go to the outside, Khalil Mack's there. But Akeem Hicks, he can rush the passer. He can push the pocket, the vocal leader, the engine that runs that team, the heartbeat of a defense. So I think it'd be hard to go, you know, without him. And I'm not saying this is comparable, but, you know, it's like the 1 year 2012 when we had Brian Urlacher, and then the next year, 2013, he didn't have him. And the defense fell apart. You know, I'm not saying, you know, Akeem Hicks is Brian Urlacher, but there is a similar type of impact, you know, and I think you want leaders in there, and you just have to do what makes sense financially. And I hope it can work out, because when he is healthy and he hasn't had any debilitating injuries where you're like, okay, he has a bad knee, he has a bad back. It's kind of been a grind, and that's kind of
popped the elbow out that one. Yeah. A freakish pop elbow.
Exactly. But it hasn't been anything that causes concern, you know, like a Todd Gurley type of knee, you know, degenerative knee or something like that. So I'm hoping they can work things out, because when he's on the field, it's a different story in there. And especially when he's healthy, I don't think he's been healthy, you know, very much this season, with the exception of the first few games. But I'm hoping they can have him back, because I love what he can do out there. And I think a guy like him and Cam Hayward, they're two of the most underrated D tackles in the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I hear all that. It's just, yeah, he wants, you know, he's making $10 million this year. I don't know if he's going to be able to get a raise in the open market. It'd be great if he came back for a little bit smaller. That I think it's just my thing is, he can still be elite, but we can't depend upon – if it's a scale of 100 and we want 100% of Akeem Hicks, yeah. I just think bringing him back next year and maybe planning on some depth and trying to get 70 out of Akeem Hicks, keep him healthy, maybe keep the snap count down. You can't predict injuries. It's just, it's impossible. But I think we're depending on a guy a little bit too much, whose availability is becoming more and more questionable. It's not a matter of ability or talent for me. It's just every time that he misses a game, we fall apart. So it's just, man, like, we either got to come up with a better backup plan or just stop leaning so much on Akeem Hicks all the time, because we just don't know whether he's going to be available or not.
Yep.
I do want to ask you this other one, because this is where the rubber meets the road with me. I'm watching this with my eyes that are limited in terms of NFL analytic experience. You have way more than me. I want to get your opinion on Kendall Vildor. Now, there's one of two things happening, right? One is Jalen Johnson's really good. So what's the opposing team going to do? They're going to try and target the guy who isn't Jalen Johnson. Mm-hmm. That makes a ton of sense. And there's a part of me that thinks Kendall Vildor is getting a ton of reps right now, right? He's getting experience. And I'm a huge baseball guy, and I believe that there is a lot of value. And you'll see those guys, those starters who have ERAs over 6 one season, but they keep throwing them out every fifth day. Just say, man, get your innings, get your head kicked in. And then they come back. And all those reps, all those experiences make them a better player, better pitcher, and it clicks. Mm-hmm. Where are you on Kendall Vildor right now? Are you seeing a guy who's getting valuable experience? Are you seeing a guy that just is maybe struggling to stand up to the test on a week-to-week basis? What are you seeing from him? Because we see 22 a lot on the end of plays recently in the last couple weeks for sure.
Yeah, I think it's great that he's getting experience. The only thing that worries me is sometimes it doesn't seem like the best experience. And what I mean is it seems like you said, he's being targeted. And the thing is with cornerbacks, right, they are a lot like receivers, right? The ego, confidence, that all goes hand in hand, right? And if you're a guy that's getting torched some, they're targeting you, and you're not doing well, that doesn't bode well for your self-confidence, right? So I would like Sean Desai to maybe give him some more help over the top, right? In his, just so they can lock down that, because it just seems week in and week out, they're targeting him, they're going at him. And it's going to be a thing where, you know, it's just going to be, okay, this is the weak spot. Let's attack him all day, every day. You know, there's the weak spot.
Need so, that field goal, Deontay Johnson on Kendall Vildor, you know.
Exactly. So we have to do something there, and it is what it is this season, and he's playing a lot. But I think, you know, going forward, we got to look at some other options, you know, possibly next season and see what we can do. You know, I think this is a tough situation, everything with the defense, because I thought that the pass rush would be more efficient than it is, right? The numbers say a certain thing, but actual game during the game doesn't say that, right? In critical situations where, you know, we need to get a sack, pressure, get the ball out quick, doesn't happen, right? We're not generating that pressure. You know, Robert Quinn has had a great season sack wise, but you know, third and medium to longs, we're not getting off the field. Quarterbacks are holding the ball too long. So I think if we're able to generate more pressure, and that starts with Desai, he needs to, you know, look in the mirror and say, listen, we're not generating enough pressure when we need to. Our sack numbers look good on paper, but when it's critical situation, we need to get off the field. We need to dial it up. And I think that's the key to helping a guy like Kendall Vildor is to generate more pressure, right? Because everything is that much easier. And we talked to Ike Taylor about it. Isn't it so much easier when you have a front four, front seven that's generating pressure? It makes your job that much. Oh, 100%. You know, some of the best teams that he was on when they won Super Bowls and, you know, making runs every year, you know, they dialed up that blitz and really put pressure on opposing quarterbacks, right? It makes the ball come out quick. They get nervous. They throw the ball. I look at Matthew Stafford this past, you know, he threw two picks in the game, you know, to the Titans. I mean, because of pressure in his face, yeah. You know, pressure cripples people. And I think that's what we need more of. And I think it would make the back end's job that much easier if we can get more pressure.
Yeah, and to be fair, obviously the Bears had to make a decision on, you know, cutting Kyle Fuller and his $13 million because they mismanaged their cap, and then they signed Desmond Trufant, who didn't make it through training camp, and they signed Trey Roberson, what was it, a year or two ago, who immediately got hurt, and he didn't make it on the field. So it's not like Kendall Vildor is some sort of being the anointed other cornerback. He's kind of in that position where he has to pick up reps. And, yeah, I'm just trying to figure it out where I don't want to be the guy that says he sucks. I just know that he looks like he's on an island sometimes, right? Like, and I know that opponents are like, hey, Jalen Johnson is a dude. Like, he's physical. He gets his hands in everything. You know, I thought that pass interference was kind of another BS call.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
You don't turn your head around. Like, yeah, what are we doing? And I just feel like they're picking on Kendall Vildor over and over again. And I'm just hoping that maybe these reps and experience give him something else to build on. But maybe to your point, you know, again, the defensive unit needs to make his job a little bit easier, and that's how he can have success, and that's how the Bears can have success, because the defense is obviously still going in the wrong direction, injuries at the wrong places, and we've spent so much time talking about the offense, but really, it's this defense moving forward that I'm looking at in the next season or two that really kind of has me going, man, we might have some work to do. You know what I mean?
I think for sure. I think there's definitely some work. I think it's more about depth, in my opinion. I think what the key is, and just from playing in this league and seeing the teams that do really well and get consistent pressure, they have a great depth, right? And what I talked about, I always bring up Rod Marinelli because I think he was very good about keeping guys fresh, right? Having, you know, different pass rushers that you can bring in, different defensive ends, tackles, noses, to keep guys fresh, right? Because when the game's on the line, when you need that pressure, when sometimes we see other quarterbacks holding the ball right now, it's because guys aren't fresh. And you cannot give 100% on your rush if you are not fresh, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there should be a thing where, hey, 5 plays, 6 plays, then you get out. Right? Stay fresh, because it's going to be better for the team. You're going to be better. You're going to be able to give more effort, more consistent pass rush. But I just don't think they have the depth right now, or they don't feel comfortable with it, you know, in my opinion. So I think this offseason, we really need to work on the depth at all positions. Maybe have a defensive end that can play the run, you know, really well and pass rush at times, but maybe he's a little bit better inside as a pass rusher. Some flexibility, you know, kind of like, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers have done for years with the Patriots. They have guys, you know, like I think of a guy like Aaron Smith that played for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mm-hmm. You know, he had so much versatility, you know, at times, you know, he'd be able to play defensive end, then three technique, then nose tackle. And I think that type of element and being able to do different things, it's a nightmare matchup, because he's a guy that's 6'4", 6'5", you know, that's quick, strong, and he's going against a shorter guy in a guard where he has more length on him. So, you know, having guys like that can play multiple positions and they can give you some flexibility. Hey, he can rush from the outside. He can rush inside. He can rush a nose. So going forward in the offseason, I look for them to have guys like that.
Yeah, that's really insightful, because for every elite Bears defense I can think of, there's a Mark Anderson coming off the bench for 9 or 10 sacks. There's a Christian Jones filling in for 12 tackles. There's a Bryce Callahan making plays. And these aren't the household names of the elite defenses that we've known in the past, but those are the guys that come up and really make it happen. And yeah, in terms of the Steelers, I mean, just look what they did. They had Bud Dupree a year and a half ago, and all of a sudden Highsmith, you know, as the depth, comes in, makes a couple plays because Bud Dupree's in and out of the lineup, and all of a sudden they say, don't worry, we don't need you. Bring in Melvin Ingram. Highsmith, you know, their depth continues to make the decisions on their roster easy for them based on those backup plays.
And I got a question for you, Joey. So, you know, in your opinion, you know, how do you think Pace has done as far as bringing he's done a pretty decent job, in my opinion, bringing talent, you know, the starters, et cetera. Don't you think really knowing a team, it's more about the supporting cast, right? In all facets of whether it's basketball, football, don't you think the supporting cast, you know, is maybe not as important, but it's more important than people think. How do you think he's done at bringing a supporting cast, you know?
Well, as we've seen throughout his tenure, let's go to 2018 and even 2019, you know, there was the smaller moves like bringing in a Buster Screen and a Bryce Callahan, like I already mentioned, you know, and it was those kinds of moves that I think were really helpful for this Bears defense. Now, like in general, there's two things about it. I think in general, Ryan Pace has done a pretty decent job with drafting anyone who isn't a tight end. anyone not named Adam Shaheen, and we'll see what's going on with Cole Kmet. But there's two things that have been going against him. One, obviously, he keeps burning first-round capital. He keeps moving up in drafts and burning later capital, which is silly to me. I don't understand why he had to trade up for Anthony Miller when the one thing that you can tell Ryan Pace is that from rounds 4, 5, and 6, it's when you do your best work, man. So don't burn that capital just to move up for someone in the second or third round. I never understood that concept. And then the other one, man, is it's hard to wrap my head around, but right after that 2018 season, he handed way too much money out to the defense. You know, I don't know. He handed money out to Eddie Goldman. He signed up Kyle Fuller. You know, he extended Danny Trevathan last year, which I found to be quite curious. You know, Adrian Amos was a poison pill, right? I mean, as much as we would have wanted to keep him around, that was a poison pill by the Packers. Obviously, they did a restricted offer on him, paid him his money, and signed him. The Bears decided not to match. And to Amos's credit, he's been pretty great in Green Bay. So, again, like I like some of the moves that Ryan Pace has made along the way, but every single move like that has been kind of countered with a move that has tied his hands at the same time, which makes me feel like that there's a little bit of a lack of vision and there's a little bit of a reactionary mentality to just because this happens or doesn't go my way, I need to automatically switch it around and I need to do something else. Like after that 2018 team, you didn't really need to spend a lot of money on Eddie Goldman, but you kind of did. And instead of saying to yourself, we're just going to ride this defense and Mitch all the way to the Super Bowl, you could have also said, our defense is pretty damn good. Why don't I draft a couple more guys, and why don't I spend that money on the offense and create more of a balance? You went top heavy in that, and we're still kind of paying for those sins to this day in terms of salary cap problems. I mean, what's your take on what Pace has done just overall?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's done a pretty good job on getting the talent in the right places, right? Bringing in Allen Robinson, you know, drafting a guy like Darnell Mooney. You know, there was a couple misses here or there, like Anthony Miller was productive for a season or two and then kind of fizzled out. You know, yeah, I think it's more so. Yeah, exactly. That's what I think more so than anything. But I think, you know, Eddie Goldman, that one kind of baffles me a little bit because when I look at, you know, paying players, I don't really see the emphasis on nose tackle, in my opinion, because I think that's a guy you can get anywhere potentially, right? I really think if Eddie Goldman was an 8 to 10 sack nose tackle, now we're talking, right? But that's the thing. You can have anybody play the run solid off the street, in my opinion. I think you could find run stuffers anywhere. It's the guys that pass rush and can get sacks and get consistent pressure that generate that type of money. And I just didn't see that, in my opinion. I thought they could have got a maybe more talented pass rusher or, you know, bring in a couple situational pass rushers, guys that are, you know, kind of like a Robert Quinn, what they were thinking, you know, towards the tail end of his career, maybe, you know, not the same as he was before, but he can pass rush, you know, bringing guys like that. I would just like more of that because I think that's what wins games and that's how you make runs in the playoffs. That's how you win Super Bowls. And I always look back to that Giants team and you look at the depth they had at pass rush. They had O.C. Amanora, Justin Tuck. Who did they have? Kiwanuka, Matthias Kiwanuka. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they had so many different weapons on there. Barry Cofield, who I played in college with, it just had so many different weapons in there that you can mix and match at any point in time. You know, Justin Tuck slid inside. You remember I talked about the flexibility. He can rush off the edge, then he can rush inside, you know, had two sacks in the Super Bowl. So guys like that can be a nightmare matchup, you know, for, you know, that can do multiple things. And I think that's always what allows teams to make good runs whenever you have a great pass rush. It's not only with, you know, the front four that you have in there, it's the backups as well.
And if when you look at it, and we'll see what happens to Ryan Pace at the end of this year, but it really makes you scratch your head when you say,
I think we know what's going to happen.
I think we know. I think we know what's going to happen. And honestly, I'm kind of excited for a fresh start, because if you look back on it, we haven't paid a quarterback, I think, more than $20 million in about 6 or 7 years. Yep. We haven't paid top dollar to a running back in 6 or 7 years. So how in the hell is our salary cap this messed up? You know, and it comes down to, I think you probably know better than me, but kicking signing bonus money down the road, right? Yep. Rolling it over onto your books next year when you're really not going for it, but you're just trying to sort of save face and just kind of like be competitive in a weird way. And it's just for every time, for every mistake, the reaction to it almost made a double bad mistake. When
exactly,
I think some of his draft picks have been good. I just think the vision has been lacking like this whole time. And still to this day, we don't really know who this Bears team is, right? We don't. Like,
exactly.
You know, Matt Nagy is this offensive vertical passing guru. And Corey, at the beginning of the season, you're like, hey, man, we got to run the ball. They don't figure that out until week 3 or week 4, man. So the lack of vision has been the biggest problem. And I think that's why they need a refreshing change at the coaching and at the general manager position.
Yeah.
For someone to try and implement that and sort of walk down a straight path. Because, again, you have 5 years with Justin Fields at pretty damn good money. There is a lot of room. And I think they have $50 million coming off the books next year, and maybe more. We'll see what happens. This is the time. Now's the time, and I don't know if you should allow the same people to be making those decisions again.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree with you more. I think time is up. I think they realize that. You know, the thing is, like, what kind of makes me, I guess, a little mad about is the fact that everybody praised Matt Nagy as being this offensive guru, because of the false pretense of him being the offensive coordinator when it was Andy Reid's show. That's what kind of bothers me a little bit. And I understand that everyone's like, oh, okay, you know, he's the coordinator, so he must call the plays. But, you know, doing everything, you would think, like, he doesn't have that experience doing that, right? And I think it should have been from the jump. Listen, you know, you're the head coach. Maybe bring in a guy that you feel more comfortable, because I think the guys bought into everything Matt Nagy was about, you know, from the beginning, right? And you saw how they played for him. They wanted to run through a wall. But the thing is, once everything got disbanded with Vic Fangio, I think we figured out quick that, listen, we need a better offense, right? Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't happening, and Matt Nagy didn't take accountability for it. And I think that's a little bit on Ryan Pace, too, for not sending a message. Like, listen, I'm the GM of this team. You want to be the head coach. We need a different coordinator, right? And that should have been after that second season, right? The first season was cool because you were winning in this, but the 2019 season
was a disaster. We want to talk about last year being a problem. 19 was a total, utter.
Exactly. Catastrophe. Exactly. And halfway through that season, it should have been known. He should have had a meeting with him and said, listen, if you want to be the head coach of this team, you have to change the coordinator. You know, you have to give up the play calling. And that's it, you know? And that should have been the message. And it seems, if Ryan Pace didn't want to ruffle any feathers, or he felt, I know he didn't feel comfortable with the way the offense was performing, but, you know, I think it should have been known that, listen, this is not how we're going to run things. And, you know, at the end of the day, the GM is responsible for keeping everything in order. And that should have been known, you know, after that halfway through the 2019 season. That's not going to fly.
And Corey, maybe this is a conversation for another pod, because maybe it's a longer conversation, but isn't this all part of that NFL bureaucracy, the politics that us fans don't get to see, that you probably lived, of the whole thing of Matt Nagy's letter of recommendation came from Andy Reid? And then you begin to slowly find out that this offensive guru runs one system, and it is that system, and that system works. So we're going to keep doing it until we bang our head through the wall. There's no adjustment. There's no innovation. There's no tweaking. It is all based on the same route concepts and schemes and mentalities. And then on top of that, it's all this other thing about how, you know, they've been through a lot of offensive line coaches over the last couple of years. And I've talked to some guys too that talk about, you know, when Harry Hiestand showed up, he liked only having his guys be on offensive line. And that's why we're like, well, what happened? When Alex Barrs and Sam Mustipher got on the field late last year, everyone said, well, where were those guys the whole time? Well, it's because he wasn't Hiestand's guys. And he, you know what I mean? And all this other stuff that kind of goes into what coaches like and who their boys are and who's not in the circle and who's not in the club and all this other stuff. And Matt Nagy's been able to parlay it into a four-year career as a head coach. And I'll be honest, I don't think he's going to be a head coach anywhere else or a coordinator.
No, I agree with you. I think people are going to look at his track record and say, you know, I think he did a good job when he first Bears of you know, rallying the troops, getting everybody to buy in. Because I think if he would have just relinquished the play calling duties back in 2019, I don't think we'd be sitting here saying this right now. I think everything would have been better. And I think Mitch had a better career. Time everybody think it was Mitch and it wasn't, you know. Mitch Trubisky isn't Justin Fields, so I'm glad that maybe it didn't work out, you know. I hope Mitch has success, you know, in the future, but I think Justin Fields is a better player than Mitch could have ever been, in my opinion, you know. But yeah, I just think it was a thing, you know, with Matt Nagy that he just he ruined Mitch Trubisky, and I feel really bad for him. You know, I feel bad for him, because I think if you could have schemed it up better, you know, if you would have had Bill Lazor, you know, calling some of these plays and consistently and mixing and matching the run, I think it would have worked out a lot better. And I don't think everyone would be saying, oh, Mitch Trubisky is this trash pick, you know, and I really don't think he is. So it's just unfortunate that, you know, he had to go through that. But I'm just hoping now that they realize it. I think everyone realizes that Matt Nagy was the problem in Chicago, and it wasn't Mitch. So, you know, going forward, I just think we need to find a coach, a more offensive-minded coach that has a proven track record. That's what I said. Like, I think a Ryan Day is a great pick. You know, a guy that has called plays, been an offensive coordinator for years, his systems work, and he has experience with a guy like Justin Fields. So I think that is what one of my top candidates, in my opinion, because I look at how Cliff Kingsbury, you know, coming from college scheme and what he's done with Kyler Murray's career. And, you know, it didn't start off that way. It was a process, right? And you got to give people time. We've given Matt Nagy time, and this time is over after the season, in my opinion. So I would like to have a offensive guru, not somebody that was working under somebody, but somebody that had been a track record of calling plays.
Yeah, I don't even really, you know, and part of the reason why I was leaning, I love the Ryan Day. The part of the reason I was leaning on that Sean Payton thing, obviously because it's a big name and it would be very surprising, but I don't know, man. And people always talk about that Cheesecake Factory menu that Matt Nagy always has, you know what I mean, the big stuff. But at the end of the day, dude, I don't want a guy who calls just like one great play. I want a guy that walks in and goes, you know what, I don't care how we play today, we're getting to 24 points. Like, I love it when it goes, hey, man, I think in this game plan, we run the ball 35 times. I think in this game plan, we throw the ball 35 times. Mm-hmm. I think in this game plan, we split. I think in this game plan, we run sweeps to stress their gap. You know, I want someone that's innovative, creative, and that can willingly, like, kind of match their system to the opponent that they have on week-to-week basis.
Adjust.
Yes, keep them guessing. Keep them guessing. You know what I mean? And Justin Fields, legs, brains, arm, makeup, physicality, I think he can play a lot of different games, right? He can play a lot of different kinds of games. So if we have that kind of quarterback, we have to match him with that kind of coach. I don't think we have that right now, and hopefully we do get that by season's end.
Yep, that's what I'm hoping to.
Corey, let's go on a bye week, huh? Believe in Bears listeners, thank you so much for checking out this episode of Bears Steelers postgame. Me and Corey, we're going on vacation together. We're gonna go play tons of golf. Enjoy your week off, man. Today's episode was presented by BetOnline.ag. 50% off your first welcome bonus when you use promo code BLEAV50. My name is Joey Christopoulos at Joey Sports Guy. Corey, man, take us home. We're taking the rest of the week off, but we're coming back, and we're going to preview a huge must-win matchup against the Ravens in Week 11.
Exactly. Looking forward to it, man. You can find me on socials at Corey Wooten, C-O-R-E-Y, W-2-O's, 2-T's, O-N, Instagram, Twitter. looking forward, rest and recover, not only for us, but the Bears team, right? Hopefully we'll see a rejuvenated team. We'll see Justin Fields have some trademark Justin Fields, what we're going to know it as, performances. I'm just looking forward to it, man. The future is bright in Chicago. I couldn't be more excited. I know you're excited, you know, smiling ear to ear.
Yeah.
But looking forward to it. So rest up, recover, golf, do whatever you want to do, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Very well said, Corey. And yeah, man, I'm banged up as a podcaster, right? I need that. I need it next week.
Your ears, and you know, yeah. Your ears are hurting.
A sprained ear, man. Got a sprained ear from all this naggy yelling we've been doing recently. Everyone, thank you so much for checking out this pod. Be well, be safe. Please be good to each other. Like and subscribe this pod. And we'll be back very soon. Bear down.